Welcome to The Age Stage, and today our 14th episode. I'm Vicky Barber, and with me as always is Brody Gouzet.
Buongiorno.
Oh, a little bit of French today.
No.
Brody. No? Oh, no. Italian, sorry. That was funny, wasn't it?
I can see you've been missing your Italian recently. Are you well?
I am well, thank you very much.
I apologise. That was actually my fault. We should have had a bit of traff, but we ended up with not having it.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why it does this from time to time.
We'll cover it all up.
Well, we'll do our best.
We'll get started.
So how was your week?
My week's been great, thank you very much.
What have you been up
busy,
to?
Busy. Oh, just busy with children and school and all of that sort of thing.
How are the little devils?
Ah, they're good, thank you very much. I think they're looking forward to the end of the school year. I think they're getting a bit tired and cranky at this end of the year, by the way.
When does school finish?
Before Christmas, I have to check the date. I don't know.
Dear, we are a bit... But
I've got other things on.
Clearly.
And hubby's overseas, so I'm just running from one end of the place to the other.
Yeah, well, we can relax on the show and talk to our guest today.
We've got Tom Camp with us today.
On his solo act.
Her solo act today. Ooh, he's going to, I'm sure he can carry that.
Well, I'm looking forward to that because he gives us a completely different perspective.
He does, very regional.
That regional, yep. And so we can bully him to give us some answers.
Maybe we can just sweet talk him.
Yeah.
Maybe we won't bully him.
Won't talk to him about fishing.
And we also have the lovely Lorraine Holt, who's actually a resident at one of the retirement villages here on the peninsula, and she's going to give us a little bit of an insight to retirement
Why did she make the choice?
Yeah, how she got there, why she got there, and what she enjoys about it, etc. So that should be interesting as well.
And then we've got Sam.
We've got Sam back to talk about planning for yourself.
Yeah.
So this is quite interesting, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, she's going, because she's launching her new website, which is coming up. But that being said, she's one of the things that she's going to be doing is there'll be a free download where you can fill in the boxes to say how you want to be managed in when you've died. So do you want to be cremated instantly? Do you want to be buried upside down? Do you want to be
your little checklist of your wishes sort of thing.
Do you want a particular song? That's exactly right. So it allows you to have a think about what it is that you would like. The family may end up doing something completely different, but at least there will be a piece of paper that says this is what I would like. And filling that sort of stuff in before you start to lose your wisdom and understanding of certain things, then I think is going to be a very good service that she can offer.
Yeah, I think that's great.
So we're going to talk about that and also about potential repatriation of somebody if they've died overseas.
Oh, okay.
And how that works.
Oh, well, an interesting show coming up, Brody.
Well, it is, and I think in the meantime we are going to have our play-in music because for our master young Tom, he'll be here.
Yes.
So let's get the show underway.
Welcome, Tom. Welcome along today. How are you?
I'm really good.
I'm really good.
On time, Tom.
It is today. Good to see.
Good to see.
It is good to see.
Well, it was nice getting a text from you, Vicky, to say, are you still coming?
A pleasant little reminder, Tom.
That's okay.
That's all it was.
It was very
and
lovely.
Also ask you to travel safe, so that's why you're
I'm
here.
I'm feeling the love over here, baby. So that's good.
Solo act today.
Lone act.
Lone act.
Brody,
you're flying
solo. Flying solo.
Well, it's very pertinent, and I'm very pleased that we've had this opportunity because we haven't had you as a solo since the start.
Hmm.
And this gives us an opportunity without the other two, who I love to death, but to be able to look at matters abroad, to go slightly beyond the boundaries of Mornington per se.
Yeah. Well, again, Brody, you guys asked me to come in to be part of the show to sort of maybe give a regional perspective.
Yeah.
And I've been fortunate in the last 6, 7, 8 years to be involved with two substantial retirement villages, traditional retirement villages in the Gippsland area. One is Eastwood Retirement in Bairnsdale, and the second one is Mountain View, Lee and Gaffer, more of a boutique, sort of smaller version.
How did you get into that business in the first place, though? I mean, you didn't go to uni and come out of uni saying, I'm going to go into retirement villages.
Oh, and I just had an epiphany. No, seriously, you really want to know. This is a great story. All right. In another life, I actually met Peter Nielsen in the 90s and did some work for his group of companies and, by implication, his current employer, Chaz Jacobson, at the Village Glen.
Right.
And it was pretty tough times, actually. It was a lot of land development. Nothing was happening. Victoria had really crashed in the first half of the 90s. And I was a registered builder and was a neat little financier, and I was sort of making a few things happen. And Nielsen, as I like to call him, the grandfather of retirement around here, he sort of got onto me and said, well, look, if you can finance him and build him, maybe we can set him up and do a management thing and I can help you do that. Now, his background, he's a surveyor by trade, and you would have probably heard a well-known Mornington, Eastern Suburbs, and even down to Phillip Island, Nielsen Nolan Homes. It was originally an engineer surveying firm and town planning firm. So, of course, I was utilising them as consultants and all the development work I was doing. And I was doing bigger and bigger developments, so it was logical to roll into retirement villages because they were just the biggest development. And, in fact, that's probably how a lot of the early fathers of our cottage industry of retirement got into it. They were just builders that got bigger and bigger and building, you know, purpose-built specific homes for retirees.
Right.
And so that's how I got in it. And then I went down the track of buying some land in the western suburbs, getting a planning permit for a retirement village, thinking I only had to build them and finance them because Pete was going to run them for me. And then, and the way it worked out is that Pete stayed with Chaz and the Village Glen, which was the right thing to do. His circumstances were, and he's a much more conservative man than I ever would be. So I sat down with my staff and we all looked at each other. We cracked a bottle of wine and it literally happened like this and said, we have to become retirement village developers. And what does that mean and what does that look like? And I think, as you've realised with all the people that we've had, and particularly Stuart, and we actually genuinely like people. We like hanging around with people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a key thing. And if you've got that, then you've got the opportunity to create good community. And it's actually your value system and your good community that makes a good retirement village, not necessarily the built form. You've still got to build a nice village and do all the right things. But that's not what people catch and like. And it's not the internal motivations of why people want to come.
It's more the culture that's actually permeating.
So I genuinely had a red wine epiphany that I was going to be a giant cheering squad for old people. And while I was as nervous as anything to jump into it, it made sense of all of, I suppose, how I'm wired as a person, but all the skills that I'd learned in my career, whether it was building, whether it's town planning, whether it's finance and so on.
It could bring them all together.
Bring them all together. And I've, in lots of ways, learnt lots, met some fantastic people along the way, and I'm still here and still loving it and still got a lot of passion. Yeah.
That's good.
So what do you actually have now that's in your investment portfolio?
Okay. Investment portfolio and what we project management is Eastwood Retirement in Bairnsdale.
Right.
And that was originally a concept that I was involved with another chap who organised the shopping centre for that. So that was to provide an integrated shopping centre, medical, pharmacy and a retirement village. And
so all in the one precinct.
All in the one precinct. And another chap by the name of Croft, who a very, very good aged care developer, who sold out a lot of his aged care centres to Bupa. He had a terrific one down the road that came on stream as well. So we were able to, you know, synergise and meet the local environment stuff that was required in Bairnsdale. The other one's Lee and Gather. That was a bit of a favour, really. I had some chaps, a mate and a guy that we'd done some work for many, many years ago, thought he was buying some cheap land in Lee and Gather with a retirement village permit, and really came along and said, really not quite sure what we're doing, can you help out? And it's been a bit of a slow burn, but it's become entrenched in that local community, not a big catchment, but as a boutique, it's got everything that shuts and moves there, and everybody loves it. And for a place like Leongatha, you know, they're selling for, you know, 360, 380 grand, and you can buy the same as Pete. You can buy the same thing over the back fence for probably about 240 to 260, but people still want to come, you know.
The rural...
Having learnt the lessons in the last 6 years really about what a regional Victorian would want in a retirement village, we've launched in the last 18 months a brand called Encore Living. The first development is due to open in Trafalgar. The second one, Warragul, will commence in the new year. The third one... just being finalised now is Traralgon. I've bought a ton of land in Painesville for a second one, and there's an opportunity in Sale. So, as I said, the lessons I've learned about the needs of that local community first, what the expectations of living is to be, we've sort of set that up to roll out. So it's not too bad. I think it's nearly 700 villas. So all of my villas will total what Stuart's got and what Pete's got down at the Village Glen and the Baxter Village, but they'll be spread right through Gippsland.
So, they've chosen to, well, they are slightly regional, but only just, they're still suburban.
Yep.
The regional market is a different market, I suggest, to you.
Yes.
Can you explain what the fundamental differences are? Are they attitudinal, or are they price, or...?
Okay, well, can I do it two form? There's the, sure. There is actually the built form component that's different, Brody.
Yep.
And there is also the value system, or the best way I can describe it, the way people actually live in the country as opposed to how they would live in the city.
Yes.
So in anecdotally, the built form, they all want Eves. I cannot believe how many single widows want three bedrooms and a double lock-up garage. But when you see how much of the family come back and visit and how what goes on, they still want the big kitchens and everything like that. We're mostly doing, and I can't see that changing in the near future in the regions, we're still doing broad acre subdivision. And you might have,
yep,
two or three programs ago, the boys were talking about the new city type of dwelling is going to be of more vertical, have all the services, but be of a more, yes, vertical orientation. Well, we still have greenfield sites. So that means we're able to actually reduce the density. You know, you buy land, it's very, very expensive in Melbourne for obvious reasons. There's pent-up demand and so on. But we can buy our land cheaper, therefore we can actually reduce the density. So whereas here you might be looking at 20 to 25 villas per hectare, we're doing 16 to 18 in places like Bairnsdale and the regions, and therefore you can create more space, therefore you've got more landscape, so you create that country feel. And because a lot of our people really come off rural or semi-rural land, the change is not so yeah, significant. When they come into a village like ours. So that's the built form.
Yeah, okay. Now, so my reason to go there could easily be price, couldn't it, in the sense...
Oh, absolutely. Look, it's different strokes, different folks. If you're talking about a regional Victorian that's lived all their life in the region,
yes,
depending on their professional career, where they come off the farm or they've just locally... living in the towns and the cities, they haven't enjoyed necessarily the capital growth,
no,
that we have enjoyed in the city. Their income levels are probably not as high as what they are in the city. So therefore, the average wealth of,
yes,
a regional Victorian is nowhere near as high as what we've got here.
Yep.
So consequently, the median house prices, which is often a key indicator of why, where, and how you should build a retirement village and so on, has meant that the investment in those places and the attention that regional Victoria should have had is not there. Because, for example, Bairnsdale, when I went there 7 years ago, on a national basis, it was number 13 in the country for a retirement village in the sense of that it was underserviced.
Yep.
Okay. So for a town, a regional Victorian town of about 45,000, 50,000 people, and they were number 13, determined by the size of the population over 60. And nobody would go there and do a retirement village like a Pete's or a Stewie's because the median house price was 250 grand. And you can't build a retirement village of any substance and to meet the needs of people. So nobody went there. What I did though is went down and found that there was actually suburbs within suburbs, and median house price, for example, in Eastwood where we built at the time was about 320. And I could do a retirement village there and provide a really nice, well-appointed villa plus community amenity for around that sort of money.
Yep.
So all of a sudden I started to realise, well, people are spending 320 to 350. It mightn't be massive amounts of the population, but they are spending it. And if I could identify 250 of them, then I can sell 150 villas. And the rest is really history. We're selling our villas down there now for high threes, low 400s, and we're coming into the last couple of stages. And they would be 16, 18 square homes, double garages, all the amenities, and you'd be paying, depending on your districts here, the equivalent, like in, say, Pete's Village, maybe as much as $750 for them.
Isn't it funny that, you know, when we were kids, a 12-square home was, you know, what the norm was, and now the retirement home is 18 squares. It's getting a bit bizarre.
Well, it's interesting, too, because even before the show, when Vicky was talking about the apartments and having to review the way we plan our cities and so on, the reason that a lot of the city apartments don't attract the retirees to do what they need to do is primarily the apartments are too small, you know?
Yes.
They're geared up for people that don't actually live in the apartments, they only sleep in them, whereas a retiree still needs 80, 90, 100 square metres of living just to be able to do what they need to do.
I couldn't do the... I don't think I could do the apartment thing. A friend of mine has got an apartment that he's looking at retiring into, and it's just tiny.
Yeah,
you spend your whole day staring, hopefully, out the window because you don't want to look internally. It's too miserable for words. For me, it's claustrophobia. For me,
yeah. Well, look, the other thing.
I'd want to go to a greenfield site.
There you go. Well, Victoria, the regional Victoria offers greenfield sites, and the fundamental price of the land means that the entry prices can be lower, still profitable, still be right and proper, either for not-for-profit or a for-profit operator, but you can deliver fantastic amenity and for a lot lower price.
And regional infrastructure is there, isn't it? Hospitals, schooling, amenities, it's all there to be had.
Yeah.
It occurred to me that in some places, particularly going inland up to, you know, maybe on the Murray or wherever it might be, or in places that have had mining and so on, retirement villages potentially have been isolated as a regional business growth opportunity. Is that true?
Absolutely.
Right. So they might replace the people that pick up the people who were doing the mining or whatever.
Well, I think, again, you know, when you look at the sheer numbers and population that lives in regional Victoria, it's still 25% of the Victorian population.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you break that down, there's still, you know, 22 to 28% of those people are over 65 and still need the basic need community care needs, hospitals and so on. And one good thing about Victoria generally, certainly in Gippsland, I may not be able to be quite so
positive
authoritative in some of the other areas of the state, but certainly Gippsland, our politicians have fought very hard to make sure that there is investment in community health and hospitals, and we've seen, particularly in East Gippsland, a fantastic development of that infrastructure down there, and I understand that's happening all the way through Gippsland. And to the point that it's becoming one of the major employers of those regions. And that's what's keeping a lot of the younger people that have been born and grown up there to actually stay.
To stay and look after them.
Stay there. Mm. In addition to that, there's been strong drive to encourage people, you know, for lifestyle reasons to change, career changes. You know, there's a lot of professional opportunities, particularly in the legal, accounting and service industries.
Medical.
Mm-hmm. To relocate. So people are being drawn out of the city areas. And again, you've still got this inherent need there just purely because of the numbers of people in the age group.
So in a standard village, what would your employment ratio to village members be? Is it sort of one person per eight, or one per three, or one per...
Oh, no, it's not like that. Look, a benchmark, a 250-300 person village,
yep,
you'd probably have your minimums would be three reasonably senior employees, from a manager to an admin to a front of house.
Yep.
Then you could have anything up to two or three part-time contract gardeners.
Yep. Maintenance.
And part of that maintenance team as well. They're not... That would be a bit of a benchmark. Anything less than that, you know.
But then you also have effectively the people that are employed. When I say employed, they're loosely employed. So you're. I know this sounds a bit bizarre, but if they've got a local cinema that could easily shut down because they haven't got the people without the guys from the village, that employs somebody for the cinema, which is of value to the members in the village.
Actually, that's a really good point. We talked before about the built form, Brody. We now talk about what the value system and maybe the way a rural person would live compared with the city guy. What I've found is you don't have to reproduce your bowling greens. You don't have to reproduce necessarily your big swimming pools and your big activity. Our philosophy is just to build a community centre that's a bit like the concept of an old church hall or a big church hall, that you can do everything. It's multi-purpose and so on. So the investment in it doesn't necessarily have to be any more than $2.5-3 million, and you can provide everything you need.
Mm-hmm.
What we're trying to do is provide a safe, secure environment where the community can come and sleep and rest at night, but you still want them to continue to actively engage in the community. And one of the things I've actually found in regional Victoria is the volunteer groups are significantly more stronger. There's a stronger vibrancy built around their media, newspapers, their clubs, whether it's sporting clubs, whether it's the knitting club, whether it's the card clubs that they have and so on, bridge clubs. All of those things are really, really important. Now, because people live like that, you really don't have to reproduce, number one, the community life the same way as you might have to produce it in a city club.
I get that.
It's already existent. Yep. So you harness that. You work with those people and make sure that your residents are actively engaging in it.
And although you have this differentiator, which is lifestyle village as opposed to retirement village, if you have an active retirement village in the sense of they're going out and doing things, and you have a region like Gippsland, which has got so much beauty and so much to do, fishing, you know, whatever
Absolutely.
It might be,
yeah,
then it effectively becomes a lifestyle village because of its surroundings.
Totally agree. Look, there's people that move from Melbourne and come to our villages and go, why didn't I do this
I can get
years
that.
And years
I can
ago?
Get that. And I think we'll find that out a bit later today when we have a lass that's coming in to talk about her experience with this. I'm very excited about that growth in that area, for people to be able to go and move to somewhere like Gippsland. It's a lovely place. I'd go there in a heartbeat.
Well, look, the reality is, Brody, is I've after assessing the thing over the last 6-7 years, I've realised if you go down the Princess Highway, not a problem.
Yep.
So everything I've got is within 5 minutes of the highway or across the road or the train station.
Yep.
So technically, you're only jumping on a reasonably fast train from Traralgon to the city, and or to get on what is a well-networked road.
Yep.
And so you can have the best of everything. Now, in my opinion, the Warragul-Druin factor, the Borbore Shire, for example, that is in the next 10 to 15, 20 years is the next
corridor.
Officer Pakenham corridor.
Yep.
And now, at the moment, the entry pricing for land and infrastructure and housing is a lot lower still than closer to the city. So it becomes a very, very viable option for people to make that transition and still be very handy. I mean, I know it sounds really silly, but I've been privy to some information in that whole Coronella area where that whole Grantville thing's going to explode. It's going to become a bit of a central little thing. So all of a sudden you've got something that's 40 minutes from Cranbourne and you can be on the beach.
Yeah.
And you can and you can get into it for not much more than about $350,000.
The way Rosebud used to be once upon a time. That long ago.
Yeah, so it becomes a very good option for people
yep.
when they're considering where they need to live. And if affordability is going to be a big thing, and I believe that's become more and more enforced, particularly since GFC, the family home is where all the asset is.
Yep.
And even the changes to the pension that are coming in the new year is recognising that the government's saying we need to get people out of these asset homes and get them to spend the money, their own money, on looking after themselves and give them a life. Yep. So all
and it works in that model.
And it works in that model. Yep. And the regional Victorian option then actually becomes a real option to for people to consider.
Listen, I think that's been a really good insight into looking at the regional alternative. And I thank you very much for giving us your insights into that. And we will, next week, we'll have the team back again.
Yep.
And we'll look at sort of monetary type things. But it's been a real eye-opener, and I think it bodes well. I think it's very exciting that that you can end up with living in a wonderful area, therefore enjoying it, get there reasonably quickly because the facilities are already there, have a medical environment that can look after the important bits and pieces, and for a price that you probably didn't think was possible, provided you were prepared to say, this is where we want to go and enjoy ourselves.
Totally agree, Brady. And look, the last thing I would say, again, is that if people are considering the living choice options that they have, they need to just assess their life and determine, well, what's becoming a chore for me right now?
Yep.
And once you've ascertained that, that's usually a good prompter that you need to make the call. And the opportunities in regional Victoria to explore the outdoors, all the activities that we've talked about today, that's why you need to come early to make the most of it.
Well, my advice is if you've got a caravan and you're going down into that neck of the woods and you're just having a bit of a potter around and enjoying, why not leave the caravan for the day and just go and tap on a couple of villages and say, can I have a look?
You are onto it. And then once you've moved in, you can leave your caravan there, have a good summer. And then in the winter, you can take your caravan and go north.
That's lovely.
Good on you, bro. Thanks, that was
buddy.
Fantastic.
Let's go out with a piece of music. Probably suits. I think she's chosen this for you. This is...
Tina Turner, was it?
No, Vicky, it's not.
Called, it's no, it's not Tina.
Oh. Big hunk of love.
A big... Oh, I'm feeling the love there. Okay. Really. Hold on.
Well, I need to get a little help from my friends because poor Vicky, she's been taken crook. She was sitting there looking very pale, and she said suddenly, I have to go. And she shot out of the room, and then she came back, and she really did look most pale. I'm a bit concerned for her. Anyway, she's left us, and we will miss her. So when this gets played on Thursday, I hope she's listening, and we wish her really all the best. Now, that music I played again because the person that is sitting with us today is unique to the show so far. We haven't had a person of this person's stature and character. Her name is Lorraine Hobbs.
Holt.
I beg your pardon, Lorraine.
Go no further.
Yes, there we go. Well, that's I'm off to a really bad start. But the great thing about Lorraine is that she is going to give us an introduction to the insights in making the choice of going to live in a retirement village, because Lorraine does live in a retirement village. She does live at Village Baxter in Frankston, and therefore can give us the insights of how she came about that choice and what she thinks of living in a village is like, and giving advice as to how you come to make that decision. So Lorraine, welcome to RPP. It's lovely to see you, and thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Bodie. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, when did you first choose to go to a village? What was the thought processes that worked?
Well,
were in play.
Let's say it would never have been my first choice, but my husband's health was such that we really had to bite the bullet and do something. So when we let the family know that we were moving to the Village Baxter, they all said, oh, that's going to be great for Dad. Oh, poor Mum. And I thought, poor Mum too. And then we moved up there, and I can tell you what, on the first day I thought, this is good. I really, really enjoy it. Now, I must admit, I knew someone who'd moved into the village a couple of years before that, and she said it was great.
Now, had you been to visit her at all, or at the village?
No, we hadn't, but we had visited others there.
Right.
And we knew it was a very good setup, so we're quite, that was okay. And so we moved in, and we liked the fact that we'd only moved 3 kilometres up the road from where we lived previously.
Right. Yeah.
So we still had the same outside interests and places to go. Everything was the same, but we had extra. But I noticed that this person who'd moved in 2 years before us and said she loved it, in all this time, we've now been there 6.5 years, I've seen her at one function.
How
so
peculiar.
It tells you that you can be as involved or uninvolved as you like.
Right.
Now, I must admit, I had the misapprehension about it. I thought there could be little old ladies knocking at the door every 5 minutes wanting a cup of tea.
Yep.
It doesn't happen. It's not like that at all. It's just like living in a unit in any other area. You make friends, you socialise with them, then there's a lot of social functions you can all do together. Like we have a happy hour at certain times.
Right.
Only our happy hour is a bit longer. It's more like 2.5 hours, which is rather good. We can make use of, we can go on the residence committee and deal with management so yep. that we're always in the loop and we know what's happening. Or we can be on the Residents Association, which covers all the residents. We have about 800-odd residents, and we have 75 acres of area to play in. I don't know about modern hectares. I'm still in acres. And there's a garden club, and there's you can have your own plot or work together as a club and sell the produce, which they do on a Thursday
okay.
morning,
yep,
which
yep.
I use. Best rhubarb in town.
Oh, bad.
And then there's craft groups, a couple of those, yep. three of those, and art and so yep. on.
Well, I just want to go back to the time that you decided to go. So your husband's got an illness or a condition.
He's got a condition, yeah.
And you said, no, this is going to help us. What was it a big downsize? Were you coming down from a sort of a 12-bedroom mansion? Wasn't it?
Well, considering we only had a 3-bedroom house with one bathroom and we've now gone to a 2-bedroom unit with one bathroom, I think we've done all right.
Yes.
But we brought up 4 children in that 12.5 yes. square house.
But I bet it had a big garden.
Yes, yes. It's true.
Yeah.
But we have a very nice garden where we are too. Because
of course.
We're in a unit mm-hmm. and where we are, they're built in... they look like villa units, 2 joined together
yes.
with the garages and,
yep.
and a
you have
driveway.
A common garage wall.
Yes. And yep. so then we have got a rather nice spot with a little backyard, and plus we look out over grass and trees.
Nice.
So a lot of people would like to have our spot.
So you've effectively got the same, minus a bedroom, which you probably didn't need other than for visitors. Well, I'll come on to that in a minute. With less care. I mean, you don't...
True.
Because you've got the assistance in terms of... Do you do your own gardening or do you have someone?
Well, I choose to do my own gardening,
right.
but we don't have to.
No, you can get someone in to...
That's right. And there are some people who say to management, don't worry about a garden, just we'll have grass right up to the veranda. And they can do that. And the maintenance staff take care of the grass.
Right.
We don't do that. And if one of our fluorescent tubes goes... Oh, it's wonderful. Ring maintenance. They come and fix it.
Medical would be a fear in terms of moving into a... Well, you're keeping your medical thing because you're just down the road.
That's right.
But for some people that would be a fear, wouldn't it?
Well, we have nurses in the village
right.
who hold clinics but also will call... You press a button and a nurse will be there. So that's fine. Also, there's doctors that come into the village and they have... clinic hours in the village. Mm. We have doctor's rooms at each end. And like next week, we know we've got the a skin clinic coming in to do cancer checks on people. I mean, that's pretty good, isn't it?
Very good.
And
yes,
podiatrists
indeed.
Come in, so we have our feet looked after. So there's lots of good medical care. Plus we have the nursing home for those that necessarily need it. And there's another area called the Lodge where people are looked after, but they're not confined to bed, of course. So
right.
they have meals cooked for them, their laundry done.
Right. Is that a specific area of the...
Yes, yes.
So that's a partial care.
That's right.
Right.
So we know what we're going to be doing.
Yes.
when the time comes, if one of us has to go into care, the other one's still in the unit.
Yes.
So we feel...
And close by.
Yes, and close by. And plus, we feel very, very safe there.
Right. Is it gated in the sense that it's completely sealed off?
And... well, we have fences and gates, and the gates are closed about 10 o'clock at night.
Right.
But I'm not going to tell you how they open.
No,
just in case someone...
Absolutely. No.
Mr. Apex might be listening, so I won't say how they open.
But it must give you a great sense of safety.
Security. Yeah. And the other thing is, it's so funny, because there are so many people in the outside world who don't live in a retirement village, and they say things like, are you allowed out at night? Oh, I think that's the most hilarious thing. It's independent living. We do what we like. We could go out and rage all night if we wanted.
I'm going to be turning my head, but it doesn't mean to say I'm not listening. So you can continue to, when I ask you a question, I actually have to sort of do a fiddling here. This is where normally Vicky would be talking to you and I could go fiddle. Right. So, why did you choose it? Because it was local, and did you go and have a look at any other places?
Yes, we did. We looked at some others, and there were one or two that were quite nice, but too expensive for us.
Right.
And we had to know that if we ran out of money and had nothing but the pension that we'd be able to manage,
right,
and at Village Baxter we could.
Yep.
And the other thing is, it was very convenient, of course, still being close to Frankston Township, et cetera, et cetera. And the fact that the village has a bus service, its own bus service, which runs over to Coringle Shopping Centre or down to Frankston or to the Power Centre, et cetera, et cetera.
But you still have your own car, though, don't you?
Oh, yes, we do, because we're still quite independent. But it's nice to know that the bus is there.
Do you, you had the family down or you wanted to have a bigger party, is there a unit that you can rent that they can stay in or anything like that?
Yes, there are at least two rental units available for families.
Wonderful. That makes a big difference, doesn't it?
Oh, it's very expensive, $50 a night.
What?
I just thought you'd like to know.
I'm going to come and visit you for another 30 years.
It's not available, Bodie. You can't come. Oh, no. It's
$50 a night. That's amazing value.
It's very good, isn't it?
That's the whole unit.
Yes. Well, they're small units,
yeah,
but they're fine. It's still independent.
Absolutely.
So we've had friends from Omeo come and stay.
Yep.
Because they were doing something in Melbourne. And rather than go all the way home, they came and stayed overnight there, which was good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very good. Now, well, of course, we have a second bedroom, so we could have
someone
stay if we wanted. But but we don't encourage anyone to come for 3 months.
No, why would you?
No, exactly right.
Well, Lorraine, that's been a wonderful insight into somebody's making the choice. And clearly it's been a good choice for you. Do they have... full medical care? In other words, you can go into part care, but is there actually a full...
Yes, there's the nursing home. There's
a full nursing home.
So
you can...
Good.
It's a bit unhappy, I know, but you can make the full transition.
Exactly.
I know my mother-in-law lived in that sort of facility too. Does that give you a sense of balance and
security?
Security, yes.
It's just knowing that...
That you can migrate. You don't have to worry anymore. It's just going to take you through.
Look, if I ring the doctor to make an appointment, I find that... The receptionist will say, are you still at 8 Robinson's Road?
Right.
Which, of course, the whole village is still 8 Robinson's Road. And I'll say, yes, last stop before the grave. Well, it is. I don't have to go anywhere else.
Yes, it is. But we have to have that conversation. And, you know, that's where it's going to be. But the most important thing is that whatever time that you have available is that you enjoy it. And you're clearly enjoying
we
it.
We have
there.
Great fun. Love
Bless
it.
You. Thank you so much for coming in, Lorraine.
Thanks,
I really appreciate it. And I know that the boys... Well, they would have loved to have been here with you, but they're not terribly well either. I hope it's not something going around. In the meantime, I'm going to play a bit of music, which I don't know whether you remember. Do you remember Running Bear?
I do.
This is for you. Young Sam is back with this once more. Hello, my dear. How are you?
I'm very well, Brody. How are you?
Ms. Dickerson.
Yes.
Dickerson. Dickerson. Good to see you.
Nice to
see you
too.
You've got a bit of a tan, even. You are. Well, you're not... Actually, no, Vicky was looking a bit pale. So,
I'm looking just normal.
Yes. You well?
I'm very well, thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
Now, two things we want to talk about today. One is repatriation of bodies.
Yes.
What happens, how that works, and hence the need for medical insurance or whatever that might be.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to talk to you about, which I believe you're going to be putting up on your website, a checklist of a way by which I can get the things written down that I want to happen to me when I pass over.
Yes, and that's right.
Okay. Right. Well, let's go back to the beginning.
Okay.
First of all, here I am on a lovely holiday and I'm dancing the tango with this beautiful nubile young lass, and suddenly I feel a pain in my chest. And that was the last thing I remember. And my wife is looking a little bit ensconced, a bit angry.
Yes,
that A, I was dancing with this woman in the first place, and B, I'm now dead.
That's right.
What happens other than she starts to go and dance with a Latin lover of her own? What happens then? Does the body have to stay there, or can we get it back
to Australia? Repatriate, so bring the deceased back to Australia.
I assume that's cargo.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Technically, look, it sounds brutal, but at the end of the day, the deceased comes into Australia technically as freight.
Yep.
All right, so let's say, for example, you've passed away in England, you would be repatriated to Australia in a coffin.
Yes.
You would be fully embalmed.
Right.
So that's where all the... bodily fluids are replaced with embalming fluid for preservation, obviously, of the deceased, and all the necessary paperwork. So a funeral director would be engaged in England. They would then liaise with a funeral director in Melbourne to receive the deceased, and you would be repatriated back.
Right.
So you can have a service when you get back to Australia.
Yeah, sure.
As per usual, but there will obviously be fees in England, plus the freight costs, plus the funeral director's costs in Melbourne.
So, well, yes, but everything potentially up to the arrival of the body on the tarmac in Australia, is that covered by my
travel insurance? Yes.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay, because that wouldn't be cheap, would
it? It's not. Not at all. So when you're talking about freight, you normally average about 150 kilos worth of freight, and depending on where the person's being repatriated from or to, will determine the price per kilo.
Can this embalming be done anywhere? I mean, if you're in Kathmandu or something.
Well, you would need to be transported to a city that
can do it.
Can do that. Yeah. You know, and it does, you know, we're not just talking, there's repatriations interstate and there's repatriations overseas.
Yes.
So, say, for example, I had a very close friend of mine. She rang me and her brother had a massive... cerebral hemorrhage at aged 49. He was kept alive in Queensland until they could harvest all his organs, and then we repatriated him back to Melbourne by road.
Right.
So depending on if it's within Australia, if it's not too far, you can be repatriated by road. Okay. So that's in
but
a refrigerated vehicle.
But he wouldn't be covered by any insurance.
Yeah, he had he had travel insurance. And so the travel insurance paid for his repatriation back to Melbourne, which was about $2,000.
Yeah, it would be.
Yeah.
All right. So we get the person back. Will, unlike freight, which is sort of lifted off with a forklift truck, would you actually have a hearse at the plane side?
Depending on who the funeral director was, they would either have a van.
Right.
Or a hearse to transfer.
Yes.
But it's not, the coffin isn't just there, it's wrapped in a cardboard box.
Oh, okay.
So you can't tell what it is.
Oh, right, all right. Yeah. So it's not draped in flags or anything.
Correct.
Sort of, okay.
Correct.
Oh, well, that's important to know. What would it cost to repat potentially from, if you didn't have the travel insurance?
It really depends on where from.
Well, but
Let's pick the UK. So you'd look at least 4,000, that's without the funeral director's costs here.
So close, for at least five, probably.
You're looking at probably closer to 10 all up.
Yeah, well, all up, yes.
Yeah.
Including the funeral, or not including the funeral.
Including the funeral, but again, it depends on burial cremation. Look at a basic starting point of $10,000.
Yeah, you'd have to, wouldn't you? Mm.
I mean, you do have the option too. Some people decide that rather than repatriating the body back to Australia, they will cremate overseas and bring the cremated remains home with them.
And that's legal?
Yes, absolutely. You just need to let the airline know that you are carrying cremated remains.
My father was brought back in a Coke bottle.
Oh, was he?
Yes. Well, they had scattered the ashes, but Marie decided that she had them on the plane. And when she got to customs, she didn't know what to do.
Mm.
She was scared. She didn't know whether you know, she was going to be fined or, you know, whatever. But she said, I've got my father-in-law in there. Sorry, it's probably in a bottle, but he's dead and we buried, you know. Oh, yeah, that's all right, that's okay. But thanks for, you know, to let us know.
Certainly crematoria here provide the family with a certificate of cremation to say so-and-so was cremated, duly cremated on such and such a day. So I would always say to families to have that with them. Double-check with the airline, say I'm carrying cremated remains. Should I have them in my hand luggage, in my other luggage? I've got the documentation. What else do you need?
So if I was here and I wanted to post my ashes to England, I wanted some scattered over there, is that legal as
well? Yeah, you can post cremated remains. Australia Post will do that for you.
Right, okay. So does it have to be shown on the green slip or whatever it does, that it is cremated remains?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
And you obviously have them registered and insured.
Yes, absolutely. Now, that's very helpful. Now, let's go back to being even more helpful. You were going to be launching your, when this program is to air, your website will be up and running.
Yes.
And one of the things that you're planning on offering is a service by which I can go in and download a PDF, which allows me to tick boxes or whatever, to write out what exactly I would like to happen.
That's right. So to write out what your requests are.
Yep.
Obviously, it's not legally binding, but it does give your family peace of mind to know that you wanted to be buried at Mornington Cemetery. You wanted to have I may even say,
and by the way, this is the person to contact. And
that's right. You can specify.
I've got a funeral
everything.
Plan, and exactly. You can put that down too. Yeah. But also, you can say, "This is the music I'd like to have."
Music.
And I'd like
flowers.
To be buried. Or I'd like to be, you know, I'd like this to be with me when I'm cremated or buried.
Absolutely.
Or whatever.
And also the information that's required for the Registry of Births, Deaths and Marriages in order to get the certified copy of the death certificate. Things like where you were born, what your parents' names were, their occupations.
Oh, right. Okay.
How many times have you been married? How many kids do you have?
All of that's valuable, isn't it?
Very important.
Because if you get older and you start to forget.
You start to forget. Yeah. Exactly right. Yeah. And it's one of these things that you should really just review every now and then and update accordingly.
Well, the thing that I find so important about that is that it's something which can be done at any age.
Absolutely.
Any age, 20, even a teenager. Well, if you really have an opinion about, you know, you suddenly have a car accident, whatever else it might be, you know, we don't like to think about these things, but they're important.
But it's unfortunately reality, and I think it's very important just to have that conversation.
Well, it is absolutely important to have that conversation. It is a difficult one to have, but it's vital.
Absolutely.
You're my departing person today. Normally I'd be saying to Vicky, what are we going to be doing next week? But we can't do that because we won't see you next week.
No.
But thank you so much for coming in.
Always a pleasure.
I want to thank all the guests that have been here. Tom particularly, because he's given us that wonderful insight into the rural space. Lorraine, because she has given us an insight what it is to make that decision. And Sam, who has been a stalwart friend of the show, who's always got special information about how to deal with the most difficult question of all. So thanks, Sam.
My pleasure.
God bless. Take care. Thank you. To everyone out there, we will see you next week when we will do the eighth stage once more. My name is Brodie Guzet. Take care, and we'll catch you next week.